Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by everybody's favorite chocolate-covered Eucharist, Jesus Pieces. Guaranteed to melt in your mouth, not in the fires of eternal damnation. Remember to check out our new bulk-sized package, because every party needs a host. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
All that stuff I was taught about evolution, and Big Bang Theory, all that is lies straight from the pit of hell.
Did, in fact, evolve from... Beauty Monkey Man.
It's Thursday, it's January 17th, and it's a fine time to forget those New Year's resolutions. I'm your host, No Illusions, and this is The Scathing Atheist. On this fortnight's episode, professional bigot Peter LaBarbera codifies homophobia in a handy 20-step program. We'll have the latest on the Vatican's research into Tommy Lee Jones's flashy thing from Men in Black, and we'll discuss an Atlanta pastor's attempt to rewrite Django Unchained with Jesus in the title role. But first, the diatribe. I figured I'd inaugurate this portion of the show with a quick statement of purpose. You know, why am I doing this? What do I hope to accomplish? That kind of thing. Now, the short answer, of course, is that my wife bought me a pretty sick microphone for Christmas, and if I don't do something with it, she'll stop buying me cool stuff. But that only answers the question, why a podcast? Not why an atheism podcast. So why dedicate oneself to a negative proposition? Why do an anti-thing? And why do a podcast about something I don't believe? After all, when somebody accuses atheism of being akin to another religion or, you know, just as faith-based, atheists are usually quick to shut them down with something like bald isn't a hair color, right? Or celibacy isn't a sexual position, or not collecting stamps isn't a hobby. And those statements are pithy and they refute the claim at hand, but they're not exactly accurate because atheism is a thing. It is something. There's no not collecting stamps blogs or conferences or loosely knit political organizations. Nobody would go to the time and effort of recording a biweekly podcast, say, on not collecting stamps. So why do it at all? I mean, wouldn't it be enough to just put up one episode where I say, you know that whole God thing? I'm not buying it. Well, maybe that is enough, but truth be told, I can't leave it there. You know, when I see a Facebook post where somebody is thanking God for their child's medicine instead of thanking the doctors and scientists that actually, you know, did the work, when I hear some bigoted, homophobic pedophile lecturing the nation on morality on my television, when I see a grown adult, a person with otherwise fully functioning gray matter that still believes in angels or hell or the power of prayer, when I see legitimate fields of scientific study stifled while we get God's permission, when I see celibate men opining on women's reproductive rights, or I see anybody in their right minds listening to those opinions, when I see otherwise loving people disowning their gay offspring because Jesus don't like that butt sex, when I see legislators that would take more stock in a piece of pre-scientific literature than they would in genuine actionable data, when I see a child, an innocent victim of this, who's trapped in a family that has one of those weird religions where everybody wears the same hat, that's when I can't hold my tongue. That's when I can't ignore the 800-pound gorilla in the nave. This is all nonsense. It's all a bunch of bumbling, incoherent, disjointed, logically inconsistent, internally inconsistent, fanciful brain vomit from Bronze Age beatniks. I mean, think about it. Imagine that we're in some religion-free zone and somebody starts telling you stories. And in his stories, you know, there's a part where a dude's talking to a burning bush and another part where a guy turns the stomach of a living whale into a Holiday Inn Express. How do we then assess this dude and his stories? Do we take this guy seriously? Do we turn to him now for retirement advice? I mean, come on. But for some reason, even the most flagrant departures from sanity get a pass when it comes to faith in this culture. Any misogynistic Stone Age immoral notion is completely permissible as long as you play the get-out-of-reason-free card. What's more is that we have this enigmatic social condition that says that the more asinine the claim, the more taboo it is for me to challenge it. It's perfectly acceptable for somebody to claim that God must have had a really good reason for letting all those kindergartners get shot, but it's a total breach of etiquette for me to respond with a accusatory what? Now, I know some Christians are going to do that flabbergasted double take at what I just said. They're going to say that that statement is ignorant of all the victories that the atheists and the free speech advocates have won over the centuries. They've got to feel like they're losing, and in a sense they are. Look, Matt Stone and Trey Parker haven't been burned at the stake yet, I'll admit that. Making fun of religion has become something of a national pastime, and we've come a long way. But there's still a lot to say. So the hippie walks up to me, throws his dreadlocks over one shoulder, and he says, "You know, man, when we die, we'll all be like gods." And I said, "Yeah, we won't exist."
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
On January 3rd, the 113th U.S. Congress was sworn in. This historically diverse Congress saw a number of firsts, including the first Buddhist senator, the first Hindu senator, and, of course, Arizona's Democratic Representative Kyrsten Sinema, the only member of either chamber of Congress to list their religious affiliation as none. But if you were thinking of breaking out the party hats and the noisemakers over Representative Sinema and offering a revered position in the atheist movement, not so fast. Even as the atheists were sweeping away the shards of broken ceiling, Sinema's office was responding to descriptions of her religious affiliation with an impossibly condescending statement that read, in part, that she, quote, believes the terms non-theist, atheist, and non-believer are not befitting of her life's work or personal character. But I would take 1,000 shame-faced House atheists over one Indiana State Senator Dennis Cruz. As the Republican chair of the State Senate Education Committee, he's filed a bill that would allow school districts to require the recitation of the Lord's Prayer at the beginning of each school day, and I quote, in order that each student recognize the importance of spiritual development in establishing character and becoming a good citizen. Now, I know that the language there seems to imply that atheists have no character and aren't good citizens, but before you brand Senator Cruz a small-minded bigot, I should mention that the bill does allow individual students to opt out of the prayer for the small price of getting beaten up and ostracized by zealous Christian classmates. Okay, now brand him a small-minded bigot. His fellow state senators haven't gone that far, however, they are already backing away from the bill, citing the fact that it's all but dripping with unconstitutionality. But before we disregard this as a doomed piece of legislation, it's important to note that a similar law already exists in Florida, though as of this recording, no school has chosen to mandate the prayer. My guess is that's because none of Florida's public schools had a big pile of money in their legal budgets that they were eager to burn through. It's also worth noting that this is only the latest in a series of controversial and wrong-headed moves by Cruz. In his tenure as a state senator, he's also sponsored a series of bills aimed at allowing creationism back into Indiana's schools, so I'm quite certain that we'll be hearing more about State Senator Cruz and his crusade against the Enlightenment in the future. In other despicable bastard news, chronic homophobe Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, or AFTA, has released a call to action which offers a succinct 20-point plan on how best to deny homosexuals equal rights in the new year. AFTA is classified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-gay hate group, but just to make sure that they don't fall off the list anytime soon, they've offered a recent press release that encourages fellow Christians to, among other things, pledge that they will never say or do anything that affirms homosexual, bisexual, or gender-confused behavior as acceptable, reject what they call the gay activists' propaganda that would have you believe that summarily denying the equality of a group based on the prejudices of Bronze Age morality qualifies somehow as hate or bigotry, and finally, that Christians stop relying on Fox News to defend the truth on homosexuality, a point that's followed by a curious accusation that Bill O'Reilly has pretty much switched sides. That could, of course, mean all kinds of things that I'm not willing to say directly. If you'd like to see the full list of Mr. LaBarbera's bullet points, check out his website or just go to any dirt floor redneck bar in Vinegar Bend, Alabama, and mention gay marriage. In international news, the Roman Catholic Church of Germany has fired the lead investigator in an inquiry they began into their end of the child rape and torture pandemic. Chief Investigator Christian Pfeiffer was nixed because, as Matthias Kopp, spokesperson of the Catholic Bishops' Conference, told Euronews, quote, "the mutual trust is totally broken." Now, if the notion that a prerequisite to a good investigation is a mutual trust between the investigator and the child rapists he's investigating strikes you as insane, that's because it is. Pfeiffer accuses the church of trying to censor the report's findings, noting that even a few months into his investigation, the church was trying to take too much control and at one point even demanded pre-publication approval of his findings, a stipulation to which neither Pfeiffer nor any ethical investigator would submit. Munich's Vicar General Peter Barr brushed aside accusations that the church was censoring the investigation's findings and stressed their unrelenting desire to continue their investigations into past abuse, adding, "No, seriously.
The skeptic in me can't help but point out, of course, that promising to investigate is a long way from promising to release the findings of said investigation, which brings us to a related domestic story. A California judge is weighing whether to overturn a previous order that would allow the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Los Angeles to black out the names of church higher-ups when it releases thousands of pages of personnel files on priests accused of child molestation. We'll be keeping a close eye on the unredacted portions of this story, and we'll report whatever portion of the truth the Archdiocese decides to let the world know on a future episode. Speaking of things that are normally blacked out, boobs! That's right, the Pope's weekly prayer was interrupted last week by a group of topless protesters. Four women from a Ukrainian women's rights organization stripped off their shirts during the prayer to reveal messages like "Shut up" and "In Gay We Trust" written across their backs and chests. The protest was meant to call attention to some of Pope Ratzi's more recent gay bashing and misogyny, such as recent statements suggesting that same-sex marriage puts the entire human species at risk. A new report by the International Humanist and Ethical Union shines a light on worldwide persecution of atheists and non-believers. This first-of-its-kind study is titled Freedom of Thought 2012, a global report on discrimination against humanists, atheists, and the non-religious. It cites laws from Algeria to Zambia that deny atheists rights to exist, curtail their freedoms, revoke their right to citizenship, restrict their right to marry, obstruct their access to public education, prohibit them from holding public office, prevent them from working for the state, criminalize their criticism of religion, and execute them from leaving the religion of their parents. That's a long list. Sorry. The report should serve as a call to action for the world politic, but more specifically for the atheist community in relatively tolerant nations like the U.S. While we no doubt face discrimination against our lack of superstition, we should never lose sight of the dire consequences that some atheists face in expressing their beliefs across the globe. Among the cases cited in the report are those of, and I apologize in advance for the pronunciation on some of these names, Albert Sabir of Egypt, who is currently serving a 3-year prison sentence for starting an atheist page on Facebook, Alexander Ayon, an Indonesian man who is brutally beaten and then sentenced to a 2.5-year prison sentence for criticizing Islam on Facebook, Philippos Loizos of Greece, who was arrested over a flying spaghetti monster-related Photoshop that was deemed insulting to a popular local monk, noted Indian skeptic Sanal Edamarku, who was charged with insulting Catholics by pointing out that a miraculous weeping statue is being aided by a leaking pipe and is currently an international refugee because of it, and finally Jabour Mejri of Tunisia, who is currently serving a 7-year prison sentence for posting Muhammad cartoons on Facebook. And finally, the American Atheist Organization has announced a scholarship for atheist activism. American Atheists will be awarding scholarships to 3 students who demonstrate atheist activism in their communities and schools. The Founders Scholarships grant a first-place award of $2,000 and a runner-up award of $1,000 to atheist students, in addition to a $1,000 scholarship for LGBT atheist activism. For details on how to apply, check out atheist.org or check the show notes on this episode for a handy link. That's it for headlines. When we come back, we'll discuss the upcoming inauguration and all the silly religious crap that goes with it. The lunatic, liar, or lord argument is a piece of apologetic mental masturbation that could easily be refuted by a well-read middle schooler in which the guardian of nonsense suggests that Christ must have been a liar, a lunatic, or exactly who he said he was. Or more precisely, exactly who somebody once said he was, according to somebody who wasn't there. But in addition to being a fatally flawed, fallacy-filled, flagrantly fatuous fragment of foolishness, it was also an ill-conceived game show concept from TBS that never made it past the pilot stage. Luckily, I've got a few inside connections with TBS and was able to procure a copy of the long-lost audio from that doomed pilot episode. Welcome, everybody, to Lunatic, Liar, or Lord. I'm your host, Tad Griffin, and with me, as always, is the lovely Judith Bress Swellington, and we're all ready to play. Before we get started, though, let's get a big round of applause for tonight's contestant all the way from Owensboro, Kentucky. Welcome, Shelley Albright. All right, Shelley, in round one, I'll give you a statement, and you tell me if it's the statement of a lunatic, a liar, or the Lord. Are you ready?
I guess so, Tad.
Statement number one, I'm a Nigerian prince and I need your help moving my vast fortune to a U.S. bank.
Liar.
That's right. Next statement, happy shall he be that seizes his infants and dashes them against the rocks.
Lunatic.
No, I'm sorry. That's Psalms 137:9. That one's from the Lord.
Really?
How about the devil is near and can be heard whispering from my Cocoa Puffs? Is that a lunatic, a liar, or the Lord?
I'm going to have to go with lunatic, Tad.
That's correct. We've got time for one final statement in round one, so here it goes. Come on, baby. I'm sure Jesus wouldn't want me to use a condom.
Lord?
No, I'm sorry. That's the statement of a liar.
Son of a bitch.
All right, now on to the celebrity lightning round. Remember, the faster you answer here, the more points you will earn. Are you ready to earn some fast cash, Shelley?
I'm ready.
Okie dokie, here we go. Charlie Sheen.
Lunatic.
David Petraeus.
Liar.
Rush Limbaugh.
Liar.
So far, so good. Jenny McCarthy.
Lunatic.
Michael Fassbender.
Oh, Lord.
Mel Gibson.
Asshole.
Oh, I'm sorry. The answer's going to be... Oh, I'm being told that's correct. All right, how about Tom Cruise?
Lunatic?
No, sorry. He is the Christ figure of Scientology and thus technically a lord. How about John Edwards?
The disgraced politician, Ted, or the disgraced psychic?
Both.
Liar.
And finally, Kim Jong-un. Quickly, we're running out of time.
All three. All of the above.
That's correct. Great job in the lightning round. Shelley, you've earned the right to join us again next week on Lunatic, Liar, or Lord. And the Lord said unto man, I have created you in my own image, but I think I screwed up on the penis a little bit. So if you don't mind chopping that, if you could just rip the tag off of it there. Excellent. Thanks.
It's time now for the Atheist Calendar. Normally this part of the show will feature a breakdown of upcoming atheist and humanist conventions and meetups all over the world, but since this is our first episode, I figured I'd just break down some of the major national conventions coming up in the winter and the spring. First, we've got the North Texas Secular Convention in Dallas, Texas. That's taking place over the weekend of February 8th at the University of Texas in Dallas, and it'll feature speakers such as Elise Anders, Jerry DeWitt, and the ubiquitous Greta Christina. Also in Texas in March, we've got a big one. The Reason Rally is taking over the Hyatt Regency in beautiful Austin, Texas, to celebrate American Atheists' 50th anniversary on the weekend of March 28th. They've got an all-star lineup, including A.C. Grayling. You've got 2008's Humanist of the Year, Pete Stark, the aforementioned Greta Christina, the young and influential Jessica Alquist, the much older but also influential Matt Dillahunty. The list goes on and on. Should be a great show. Wherever you are in the country, don't forget to celebrate Darwin Day on February 12th. Not sure how you want to celebrate. You could piss off a fundamentalist, you could naturally select a nice restaurant, or you could just evolve. I know personally I'll be celebrating at the Museum of Natural History here in hedonistic New York, New York. Speaking of the Big Apple, we've got a great skeptical conference coming our way in April. The 5th Annual Northeast Conference on Science and Skepticism, or Nexus, brings together skeptic scientists, humanists, and atheists, and it's always a great time. Really looking forward to their keynote speaker this year, Dr. Leonard Mlodinow. I think I'm pronouncing that right. They've also got Simon Singh, Michael Shermer, the hilarious Jamie Ian Swiss, and of course the SGU team will be on hand for multiple live recordings. In May, there's a full slate. From the 3rd to the 5th, you've got the Free Thought Alliance Conference in Anaheim, California. That includes a lot of the people I've also mentioned, plus the incomparable P.Z. Myers. The 17th to the 19th in Washington, D.C., you've got the Women in Secularism Conference. At the end of the month, we've also got the American Humanist Association Conference in San Diego, California. So if you're up for some great weather, that'd be a great one to pencil in. Next week, we'll look at some of the major international conferences coming up. If you're organizing a conference or you're just involved in one that needs a little more publicity, let me know. Right now, the best way to contact me is to check out scathingatheist.com and look for the contact info there. With a fresh new Congress recently sworn in and a president about to be inaugurated for the second time, I thought it'd be a good time to reflect on all the silly ways that religion likes to intrude on these secular ceremonies. Joining me to discuss the topic is my good friend Heath Enright. Heath, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noah, and thank you, God, for allowing this atheist podcast to exist.
Good point.
Your mysterious ways are confusing, yet strangely appealing. I might just be tricked into faith if it weren't for that whole rapist pedophile priest snafu.
Deal breaker. Well, suppose you were just elected to Congress, and you've got to take the oath. What are you going to swear in on?
Oh, well, that's pretty easy. Go with a stack of In-N-Out burgers. You figure it's way better than Bibles in the traditional sense of what way better means. And they still include a bit of verse printed on the packaging as a compromising nod to the Christians. Generally, these people stand in the way of societal progress, but if they really bring something to the table, like, in this case, the best fast food burger ever, maybe we can talk.
That's an interesting one to me. I would be a much bigger fan of the Bible if it was wrapped around some meat and cheese, you know? Mm. All right, so in our little fantasy world, you were a congressman, you swore in on your burgers, and somehow that worked for you. You've served a few successful terms, you kissed the right asses, stepped on the right little people, and now you've been elected president. Who is going to give your invocation and benediction?
All right, well, my first instinct is less an invocation and benediction and more a roast situation.
Nice.
Maybe Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert is a roast master.
Excellent.
Or, you know, comedian like Anthony Jeselnik. He truly captures my sentiments on religion with the following quote, which I heard him say the other night on Jeff Ross's TV show. When asked how much he hates the Westboro Baptist Church...
And really quickly, if you don't mind, for those of you who don't know right away, the Westboro Baptist Church, that's the God hates gays guys that like to picket at military funerals and get in front of as many, you know, TV cameras as they can. Sorry,
yeah, they do a fantastic job. Exactly what Jesus would do. So when asked how much he hates the Westboro Baptist Church, he responded, "About as much as I hate every other church." Deadpan delivery, he's one of my absolute favorites of all time. Maybe I hate the Westboro Baptist Church a bit more than most others, but the point is made.
All right. So now, interestingly, I gave you like less than 24 hours to come up with an answer, and you had a great one. Jeselnik, giving the invocation and the benediction. I would tune into that. Here, Obama, he can't seem to answer the question, right? You had it just like that. Here he is pussyfooting around about it, as many of our listeners have heard. He got himself into a little hot water. He originally tapped Atlanta evangelical pastor Louis Giglio. I don't know. I've just seen
it. Is
that
how that's pronounced?
I have no idea.
Giglio? It sounds like a rapist serial.
Well, you know, he sounds... Well, we're not going to get into that quite yet. Anyway, so this guy, he was going to do the benediction. He's well known for his campaign to end human trafficking. But once his name was out there for the inauguration, suddenly he started to also become known for a sermon that he delivered a while back about the evils of homosexuality. Now, to his credit, I've read the transcript. It's pretty mild as far as right-wing religious gay bashing goes, but it's still, you know, kind of awkward for him to share the stage with the most pro-gay rights president in American history. So he gets bumped, and poor Obama's off to find a preacher that's never said anything bigoted, offensive, immoral, or downright stupid. Hard to imagine why he's having trouble with that.
Are you implying that intellectual honesty and blind faith are somehow contradictory notions? If that were the case, I think we would have seen a progression away from Orthodox religion in the educated world, with decreasing numbers of religious theists and increasing numbers of atheists or agnostics.
I don't need none of your fancy book learnings, boy.
Indeed, indeed.
So,
getting back to the high-ranking religious official who publicly voiced vitriolic hate towards homosexuals, please go ahead.
Yeah, that's the one who did that thing that was once done by that one guy. Anyway, so like everybody on the blogosphere is all pissed off about that, and rightly so, and they got him, like, you know, yanked from the whole thing. But I was actually pissed off before I found out about this, because I saw the guy on CNN. He's talking about his passion movement to end slavery worldwide, and during the interview, he actually says this.
Jesus, the ultimate abolitionist, the original abolitionist.
First of all, if anything, Jesus' father was the original abolitionist. But before that, he must have been the original inventor of slavery, too. So even when taken together, I'm not impressed. It's like creating bubonic plague, then watching the bubonic plague ravage entire populations, then creating medical treatment for bubonic plague after all that suffering, and then asking for a parade in your son's name for curing bubonic plague. Anyway, did Giglio get called out for the remark, or...
You know what? Strangely enough, he didn't. Just like every Christian that goes on TV and makes asinine claims that are exactly the opposite of the truth, the host Michael Holmes just lets it slide. Now, of course, we could obviously spend the entire podcast and then some quote in the pro-slavery propaganda in the Old Testament. Jesus endorsed that one, so I can't help but wonder how the hell Giglio squares the circle here. You know, how does he get away with calling the slavery-endorsing son of a slavery-loving and, as you pointed out, slavery-inventing God, the original abolitionist? So I turned to Google because, you know, Google knows all things. And I'm looking for an op-ed or something that this dude's written, and all I'm finding is him making this same claim over and over again on a dozen different media outlets with nobody ever pointing out that it reeks of bull feces. But luckily, I was able to find one website that laid the whole roller coaster of tortured logic out here. It's ChristianAnswers.net. Great for a laugh. It presents it all in a little Q&A between an apologist and a skeptic, and I was hoping that you'd be willing to, you know, maybe reenact this little scene with me.
Yeah, I think I'm up for reenacting. Let's do it.
All right. So you'll be the skeptic, I'll be the intellectually flexible Bible thumper, and I apologize in advance because I left all the grammatical errors in. Are you ready?
Okay, just to clarify, I'm the guy who thinks slavery is bad.
That's
and
right.
You're the guy who really, really likes the Bible, so you have to somehow explain how slavery is actually good.
That's exactly where we're at. So you know your motivation and everything?
Yeah, I think I'm all set.
Lion face. All right.
And action.
Okay, so you know your Bible contains scores of verses that mention slavery, but nowhere does it ever condemn the practice per se.
I agree.
Well, why not? If the Bible is the word of God, why wouldn't it condemn such evil?
All right, so they start off here with the wait for the sequel defense. In a sin-fallen world, the battles we fight have to be chosen carefully. The same thing goes for the manner in which in which those battles are going to be fought. So basically they're saying, you know, look, the Bible, limited amount of space. We had all the, you know, the stuff about the whiteness of your garments and proper beard trimming etiquette. We didn't have room, you know, really to condemn all the evils.
Yeah, that makes sense. You got to pick your battles, they chose.
Yeah, the whiteness of garments.
Priorities. All right, well, slavery isn't just a political issue. It's a moral issue. Isn't the Christian Bible supposed to be a moral guide?
So now they invoke the eventually hoc ergo propter hoc defense, which goes like this. Of course, but as a rule, the best way to change moral behavior is to transform moral views. And guess what? Beginning in the 2nd century, many masters, upon converting to Christ, began to release their slaves. Slavery was abolished in Great Britain after people began converting to Christ under the preaching of John Wesley and George Whitefield. So, England became Christian, 1,200 years later they abolished slavery. You know, obviously the Bible worked.
That's the logic, okay.
That's where they're going.
All right. So the next question their skeptic is going to ask is, why doesn't the Bible just come right out and condemn slavery in so many words?
All right, and now they are going to invoke the slaves had it coming defense. Did you know that in the Old Testament, slaves were often prisoners of war? And then there's some nonsense about the law of Moses and the fact that Israel never captured and sold humans, so at least we're better than the Phoenicians and Philistines.
At this point, skeptic's going to say something like this. For me, slavery is slavery. It's wrong, it's immoral, and the Bible should be against it.
Now we also have to add the equal opportunity slavery defense. On the contrary, slavery in Bible times significantly differed from slavery in modern times. It was not based on race. It was often less imperialistic. Some believe that in many cases it was actually more of an indentured servant type of arrangement. I'm sorry, I can't say this crap with a straight face. Yeah, it was an indentured servant type arrangement where you got occasionally beaten with many blows. I'm sorry, this is just so... how do we know it wasn't fun slavery? Maybe the masters were making them eat cake and judge fellatio contests. Who are you to judge? So I'm sorry, I'm losing it.
All right, well... Let's say you started to mention particular passages again. In the Old Testament, Book of Leviticus 25:44-46, if my memory serves me, slaves are actually referred to as possessions, and Jesus himself sometimes used analogies that seem to tacitly condone slavery.
This is the, look, I've got someplace to be defense here. They basically just restate the premise that obviously their own skeptic wasn't buying. Again, the Bible primarily details the accounts of how God has chosen to deal with the tragic results of a sin-fallen world down through the ages. While recognizing the reality of slavery as it existed in various forms, the Bible never actually condones it. It rather gives slaves, both then and more recently, a spiritual basis for worth, dignity, equality, and hope to face difficult circumstances. In the end, at a deeper level, its position is clear.
So, like, modern African Americans are, you know, in a better place for having, you know, their ancestors dealt with those atrocities. That's this, you know, strength through experience argument.
Apparently that's what they're saying. Or at least they're saying, hey, they may not have had freedom, but at least they have the Bible. So, yeah.
That's it for our show this fortnight. I'll be back in 2 weeks with more. If you can't get enough of us, check out the blog at skatingatheist.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or just listen to this episode over and over again until I make another one. Special thanks this week to Heath Enright and Lucinda Illusions. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you can find all the contact information at skatingatheist.com. If you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you use and help us spread the word. All the music used in this show was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I had my permission. Thank you.
I'm sure we'll need to do another take of it.